don't you sing a less angry song? Progression's good, but your words are all wrong. Guess you forgot it's a people's song. I'm afraid I don't want cake. Promise tried and proven fake. Leave behind my worry mind. Take back all my wasted time. Jumping ship, well, I still can. Cause I can't find a better way. I wanna start a new day. I wanna try a new way. I wanna love and not be afraid of what you got to say. I wanna live and not have. Catch up and meet the times. Try to be a better man, but I can't find a better way.
your eyes, you've become the ones you hate. You're the same, you're the same, you're the same.
You're listening to 101.5 FM on UMFM. Welcome to UTalk. I'm your host, Ryan Funk. I love YouTube, and I probably spend too many hours there. Some of my favorite content is video essays. Deconstructing a piece of media to understand its creation, the emotions it evokes, and what it does within the medium, and what its impact is on society, both positively and negatively. Lamhoot is a creator who does just that, looking at the video game industry and critiquing game design and the industry as a whole. In a recent video, he looked at the game Hades and how, as a Greek person, he found its representation subpar. Let's get into it.
Hi, I'm Dennis. Online, I go by Lamhoot. I'm a video essayist. Basically what that means is I make pseudo documentary style content on things that are interesting, except they're biased. I mean, they're more like, I guess, like video editorials in a way, but yeah, that's the sort of stuff I do, and have a lot of fun doing it. Mostly tech related, but I like covering gaming related topics in ways that people don't often. So kind of embedding a little bit of ethics, embedding a little bit of my background in like software development and that sort of stuff, and kind of applying those principles to entertainment.
Well, when I came across your video on TikTok, I was just so impressed with it. It just clicked with me right away. It's like, huh, that's an interesting thought that I had never had in terms of looking at the game Hades from that perspective. But we'll talk about that in a little bit. So a YouTuber, what sort of inspired you to decide to go put yourself out there and start sharing your opinions on topics that interest you?
Like, I guess, like, I'm kind of from that generation of, like, every kid had, like, a YouTube channel back in the day. We all made, like, goofy videos. Like,
same
yeah,
here.
Exactly. Like, lip sync. Like, I started with, like, lip sync videos to, like, weird, like, songs and things like that. So, like, old school, just, like, what can you do with, like, the basic amount of editing with, like, Microsoft Movie Maker? You have one audio track. Like, how much can how much damage can you do, sort of stuff? But it kind of evolved, I think, as I kind of got a little bit older, started going to school, and thought that it would be interesting to kind of, the thing about, like, these days on YouTube, there's a lot of, like, gaming related content, but I didn't see anything that kind of took itself a little bit more seriously in the way that I wanted to. There are people, you know, like, making goofy reviews and, like, getting angry and, like, you know, joking about, like, punching the game or, like, being haunted by the game, like, the very, like, in character reviews of video games. But I like to think of games as, like, socio-technical systems where they're a piece of technology that, like, functions and people have to build them, but also they have social impacts. And just like any other piece of art, like, there are also artists working on them and there are people who will consume them and interpret them different ways and feel differently about them. And I felt like obviously these days, tons of people are making, like, video essays in, like, the same vein. But at the time, nobody really was. So I thought it was really interesting to kind of get into.
When I was listening through at least that Why I Haven't Played Hades video, it reminded me a lot of the process and time and the effort that goes into thinking about it. Like H. Bomber Guy. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but it's so impressive to see individuals critique and break apart the content and media that we're consuming. People just kind of, like, soak it up and they don't think about it, process it. kind of figure out those flavors of it.
And I think it's a fun opportunity too, especially if you have like a personal connection to it. Like I love videos where someone has like a real deep personal connection to either the content of the media that they're analyzing, or even just like, you know, someone who's like incredibly familiar with it and just kind of like has that tacit knowledge that I don't have about it. Like I love to just be educated on something like something that I may have played or experienced from an angle that I just did not expect because I either didn't think about it that way or I just don't have the personal experiences to consider it that way.
When you start hearing people break it apart and hearing their opinions, it makes you want to think about it more as well as like, okay, what are the things I'm looking at? I'm currently going through the process of transitioning to maybe more film-related content. My 10-year plan is hopefully be a director or something in the next 10 years. So now when I'm looking at television and movies, I'm thinking about it from behind the camera now instead of just, hey, I'm just enjoying this content. So, I mean, part of it is a struggle because you're like, I can't turn my brain off anymore.
Yeah, just overanalyzing everything.
With your content, is there kind of new other topics or things that you want to kind of tackle or take on?
Specific to, so the one that I, the Hades video that we're referencing, kind of, so that one, there are a couple of, so that one I kind of always envisioned as like a two-part sort of thing. Part one was kind of like the basic idea of Hades, and part two was kind of going to delve into like different games and it was also going to have more of a local twist about like things I've noticed specific to me. Obviously, living in Montreal, there's a lot of media and game studios and things here. And so I've noticed certain trends in the games that are made here versus games that are made elsewhere that I thought was really interesting and would seem almost like counterintuitive if you think about like, you know, the perspective outsiders tend to have of Quebec. It's like it was kind of like this question of like, you know, why is Quebec this place that like, you know, is stereotypically very xenophobic, making like Assassin's Creed game where you're playing in like Baghdad as like a person from who would have lived in Baghdad in, you know, whatever year that is, or why are they the ones making the game about ancient Rome or ancient Egypt? It's like, it was like this really weird thing of like, of all places, why Quebec? And so I kind of wanted to split up like the context building of that argument into a part one and then continue in a part two. But yeah, that's basically where I'm thinking of going.
Well, I mean, they take a long time to make these sorts of videos. Like, you're writing and rewriting and going through scripts over and over and over again. Like, the journey of a creative is never over.
Yeah.
So, coming to this why I haven't played Hades video, I heavily enjoyed it. And listening through, I'm like, oh, yeah, these are perspectives and things that I've never thought about, never thought to critique. Because for me and my friends, it was just a fun game that we played during the pandemic. You know, got a couple hours out, you do a couple of runs, the art style is great, and you're like, wow, this is such a good game. And then you hear about someone of, you know, Greek background talking about it, you're like, oh yeah, huh. That's an interesting thought. So for those who haven't seen the video, can you give us a short little synopsis of what you kind of cover in it?
The video is basically, and like, obviously the title is very clickbaity and everything, but the main point of the video is to try to capture this feeling that like, I know myself and many other people I know of Greek descent have kind of felt like whenever some sort of Greek mythology related piece of media comes out and we all see it and we all kind of just yawn at it and go like, what's the, like, why are we beating this dead horse? Like, why hasn't like Western media moved on from this? And it was about trying to capture that through the lens of, you know, the popular game of the month, which was Hades when I started writing the video like 2 years ago, but trying to like, you know, express this very like real sentiment that I know I've had and so have others that, we wish that if media producers want to keep revisiting this world, it would be nice to actually see real, genuine representation here for as much as we have to, you know, trudge back through the depths of Hades. And also there was a little bit of a local twist of like, not just, you know, kind of like this quest to like seek Greek representation in Greek mythology related media, but also specifically as someone of Greek descent in Quebec, where obviously the political and social climate has kind of changed the way people of different ethnicities tend to engage with their identities. And so that was kind of the point of it. And then, it took me 2 hours to get to the point. But yeah, it was a fun time. It was a fun project.
Anytime now, fellas.
In the tracks to the hot-top part of town. I'm the low-down rescue from the garbage can. They don't want my kind around. The muscle on the door, he can't find my name. That's okay, I got my invitation here. He sees my greasy hair, he sees the stitches on my face. He weighs me through and he gives me a sneer. I met his chewing gum children and I met his bad faced wife. He ain't no hero to me.
When something's worth being said, sometimes it just takes a long time to say it.
Yeah, you just keep going on and on. Yeah, yeah.
How did you approach this topic? So you're mentioning that it took you about 2 years kind of working on it. What was your like mindset going in and then kind of you write the script, you start the recording process, and then you're going in editing? What was that process like?
So I mean, it was very, very like obviously very like research oriented, very like I kind of know where I want to take this video, and I, you know, kind of like structuring out as far as like bullet points of like I want to get, you know, I want to touch this point, I want to touch this point, I want to touch this point, and then trying to string together a narrative through them, which isn't always easy, but kind of like using, you know, different sources and different research to kind of like string that narrative is an exercise in and of itself. The basic like development structure of a video like that basically looks like writing out a basic like template or like a rubric for what I want to do, finding sources that I can use to back up certain points I want to make, and then trying to tell an interesting story through it, which I think is fun. Which in my case, I also want to talk a little bit about the Quebec stuff. So that's kind of why I started with like, you know, referendum bit. I think this is really engaging. People don't really know about this history, and then kind of trying to tie that to the actual topic of like, what does this have to do with this game?
For Canadians, yeah, Quebec kind of has this reputation about it. You hear a lot of stories from there, a lot of kind of conflict between the peoples and the government, like
regulations around people being able to wear the hijab, or like the French language regulations for individuals who are coming in. And you touched on it perfectly in your video, Greek immigrants struggling to not only learn English, but trying to get French as well.
Yeah, it's like, it's this really tough, like, the classic immigrant story is like the immigrant who moves to the United States, they go to New York, and then they have difficulty learning the language and whatever. In Quebec, you get hit by it twice, because you have to learn English and French. And then depending on which of those languages you learn first, you'll then get judged by the other. So like, basically, like the Anglos and the Francos are mad at you because you don't speak either. And then depending on which one you learn first, suddenly you've assimilated into that group and you gain the hate of the other group like twice. It's this very interesting like immigrant experience of like joining and assimilating into the culture, but in a place where there's already this like dichotomy of cultures of like Anglo and Franco, and you kind of have to pick a side, or, you know, I mean, because it's hard to learn two languages at once. So you have to pick a side by nature of like, it's, you're learning something brand new. So yeah, I think that's really, it's an interesting struggle that I feel like there's not many other places that have this sort of like bilingualism like we do here. And so it's not like, it's not a struggle that you hear about often.
And like in other parts of Canada, it's really like the French aspect isn't really pushed that hard. Like I took a couple French classes in elementary and high school, then they're like, it's good enough. So at least my French knowledge is you can look at a menu and you're like, okay, all right, yeah. I get, okay, that's chicken. Okay, let's look at the context. I think those are the sides. We'll never know. But yeah, for immigrants coming in, and you were mentioning there like some of the discrimination that Greek immigrants faced. What was it in the Le Grexo, Quebec? I'm butchering that. But from 1921, about 2,000 Greeks and like 150 restaurants.
That's another thing I wanted to touch on too, is like there's that trope, and obviously it's not just in Quebec, but it's all over the place, where like, oh, you're Greek, your family must be in the restaurant business. And it's like, well, that's not wrong, but it's not, it's also not,
there's a lot of context.
Yeah, there's a lot, like there's a reason for, it's not just like, it's not a stereotype for no reason. Like it's, yes, it's, is it accurate? Yes. Like, do I have people in my family in the restaurant business? Yes. Would they rather have not been in the restaurant business? Would they rather have, you know, gone on to higher education? Would they rather have, you know, not had to work in mines, building rail carts? Would they rather have like done other things? Absolutely. But they did what they could, and their easiest avenue to like success, or like almost like, I guess I would say like comfort, was often restaurants, because there just happened to be a strong presence of Greeks in the restaurant industry already. And so it was easier to get a job in the restaurant industry, or whether you know you're actually working in a restaurant or like you're tangential to it. It was easier to do that than anything else. So like, yeah, the stereotype exists, but there's like a, you know, there's like a kind of like a darker history behind it that I wish people understood. So that, yeah. It was fun to kind of like bring those sorts of things to light in the video, in a video that's like otherwise about a video game that people wouldn't have taken seriously.
I think it's important to have these conversations and looking at why do these things happen. It's not just because, oh, I'm X, so I'm automatically attracted to this, but it's no, there's systems in place, and sometimes you're forced into a box that you can't get out of because of just everything's out to get you.
My family, for instance, my grandfather was like connected to the restaurant industry, didn't own restaurants, but he worked in like kitchen equipment manufacturing, because when he came here, he was basically imported to Canada as cheap labor to work on like in railways, like welding. And one of the only transferable skills he learned was how to weld. And that was something he could apply to the restaurant industry. And the only people, because he only spoke Greek, the only people who could sell to were Greeks who tended to be restaurant owners. So it only made sense for him to like, you know, he knows how to work with metal. He knows how to speak Greek. He's going to make restaurant equipment. So it's like, it's this thing of like, it's exactly, it's like, it's the box he filled into. And then he figured out how to break out of it, but he couldn't, you know, he couldn't break out incredibly like far, like diagonally go into, you know, he couldn't have just randomly gone to university or something. He had to find something within his domain of things he was familiar with.
When we're looking around about kind of the regulations and the systems in place in Quebec, in terms of immigrants and other diasporas, what do you think, at least in your opinion, what are some ways that you feel it could be changed to better include and support people coming in. Because here in Canada, we're built on immigrants. That's kind of the whole point of the country, that we have this mosaic of cultures and individuals, and, you know, together we can create something that is uniquely Canadian. And by just putting up a wall to say, nope, you have to do it this way, we're really kind of shooting ourselves in the foot.
It's tough to see. And I think, like, you know, you touched on before, like the religious symbols bans and things like that, that are, you know, very clearly targeted at certain religious groups that have, you know, like overt symbols of their religion that they wear on their bodies, and tend not to focus on ones that, like, have, like, more, you know, subdued or I don't know what the right word is, but, like, conceal, like, they're not going after the person who's wearing a crucifix under their shirt, you know? So the fact that, like, these regulations affect these people, the way that affects new immigrants who come in who maybe have children who go to school, is that they don't have role models in places of, like, public, like, the fact that, like, suddenly Muslim women have to make a choice between wearing a hijab or being a school teacher means that, like, the Muslim girl whose mother maybe at home wears a hijab can't see, like, a role model or, like, anyone in her public life who, like, as an adult and also wears a hijab and, like, has a job and, like, does something, is really, really scary. It's a really tough political climate to navigate. The thing is, it's, like, it's tough because, like, I guess nobody really knows what the solution to it is. Obviously, it's to, you know, don't target minorities with like terrible laws. But at the same time, like, there's like that weird, well, because, like, the whole thing is, it's always under, like, the veil of secularism, which, like, most of the time is, like, yes, that's a great thing, but, like, to a limit. Obviously, like, you, people deserve their basic human rights, and if you practice some religion that you want to be able to practice, you should be able to continue doing that and not have to, like, sacrifice your career. That's, like, a no-brainer, but I guess we haven't figured that out yet.
Yeah, that's just this. You feel like we've made progress when you look at the books. You're like, oh yeah, but then you actually look at, like, the timeline, and you're like, oh yeah, things haven't, like, in the United States, the civil rights movement was not that long ago.
Yeah.
You're like, oh yeah, maybe we have. And it comes to any topic, like,
yeah,
misogyny, ableism. It's like, hey, it's 2022. Maybe we've and then you look online and you hear people talk. You're like, oh wait, never mind. Guess we're not that far ahead as we thought.
Yeah. It's sad how things regress like that.
What you're talking about, I think it's a perfect segue to talk about representation in games and media in general. In terms of Greek representation, it is very poorly handled. I remember watching, like, Clash of Titans, and, like, you have the segment in there with Liam Neeson barely quotation marks covering his accent.
Yeah.
And it's just a bunch of, like, white British guys. And it just, even at the time, I thought it felt weird.
Yeah, definitely. There's this thing of, like, they call it, like, the Queen's Greek or the Queen's Italian or the Queen's Roman or whatever trope of, like, for whatever reason, when these, like, characters of immense power are supposed to be represented in media, often they're depicted with, like, these British accents, right, to make them sound, like, regal or royal or, like, you know, fancy in some way. And it's the sad, like, realization, if you're someone, like, of that culture, is, like, what? Like, what's, like, I know people who are Greek who barely speak English or French and speak, you know, what they can with, like, a terribly strong Greek accent, who are respectable. Like, their accent has nothing to do with how, you know, how much I can look up to them or whatever. And so it's this weird, and it's also, like, the how regular it is that this occurs, that, like, how regular that, like, there are more depictions of Zeus with a Greek accent or with a British accent than anything else, means that whenever someone does try to make an effort to positively represent or, like, accurately represent these people, people think that it's weird. So, like, one of the things that I'm working on for the next part of this video is about Ubisoft games, where they tend to, like, whenever they depict anyone, which they tend to depict a lot of different people just by nature of their games being, like, basically, like, giant interactive history books, is they always hire people of those ethnicities to perform to play the characters. And so because they've been to Greece a couple of times, they've had Greek actors play the characters, and the public reception to it is always like, why do these guys sound so weird? What's wrong with these people? And it's so weird to see that, because to me, that's like, oh my God, this guy sounds like my cousin. This guy sounds like my uncle. This guy sounds like my grandfather, something like that. And then it's like the regular gamers are like, why do these guys sound so weird? Or was it Russell Crowe who played Zeus, I think, in the new Thor movie or something? I haven't watched a Marvel movie in a long time, but yeah, but he did that. And then I saw people online being like, why is this guy doing like a bad Italian accent? And being like, no, you guys don't get it. It's actually really cool. It's actually great. Oh my God. It's like, I don't know. It's an unfortunate like spot to be in, because it's like, it's whenever people do more than the bare minimum and they actually try to represent the ethnicity and the way it looks and the way it sounds accurately, because most Western audiences aren't used to that, they think like something's wrong or something's broken or the actors are doing a bad job or something like that. And so I guess it kind of like it reinforces to these studios that actually do try that maybe it wasn't even worth the effort in the first place.
It just shows how much everything is whitewashed, like completely. And then you try so hard, at least for myself, I really appreciated the efforts that they put in, like, Assassin's Creed Odyssey. Like, hearing them, oh no, I'm blanking on the name of the main character right now. It's been so long, but like, yeah. Just like, Malacca, like it's...
Yeah. That's the thing, it's like, that. It's silly, but like that is representation. That is like the most common word you will hear in any Greek household. And the fact that like you hear it there is incredible. Or like even before they went to Greece, when they went to when they did Assassin's Creed 3 or 4, whichever one took place in the second time they basically went to Istanbul, is they fight a bunch of like Byzantine guards who are all Greek guys. And like one of the first lines in the game is like, your Ezio like stabbing a guy in the back of the throat and throwing him over a cliff. And he goes, oh, Malacca. And it's like, oh, that's so great. Oh my God.
Well, which is why we need to have more of this. Just continue to normalize it. Cause it's so fun to learn about other cultures that are just not like, hey, this is just Europe with a diff, or like the UK with a different kind of paintbrush put over it. I'm really big into Dungeons and Dragons, and I'm so sick of every campaign setting being based in some generic kind of European country. It's like, give me something unique, get some other writers in the room, get some interesting things. Because there's a game that came out a couple years ago that is set like that. I mean, the mechanics of it were but the story touched on like Hindi mythology and history, and it was just so interesting and vibrant in terms of like the design and art direction that I couldn't help be like interested when I saw the trailer.
Yeah, and I can only imagine that like obviously creators who, because obviously creators like consume content like this, like I can only imagine any time, you know, a game like that goes and like represents like Hindu culture in a way that it's never been represented in games before, or like, you know, even, you know, Ubisoft, I keep using them as like a crutch, but like whenever like a massive studio like Ubisoft pours millions of dollars into representing like the cityscape of like Istanbul, and like hearing people like speaking Arabic or speaking Turkish or speaking like all these strange languages, and being like, wow, like really capturing what it felt like to be in like this place of incredible Middle Eastern European diversity, it must like inspire people of those descents who like consume that content to be like, oh my God, like maybe my background that normally isn't depicted in media is worth representing in some piece of art that I'm working on, some game, some film, some, you know, whatever they're working on.
Seeing someone who looks like you and sounds like you in media is just so important. Mm-hmm. For people that look like me, it's basically been every character for so long. And so whenever they release like new characters, like Marvel is bringing in like new characters, like Kamala Khan now in like the fourth act or whatever yeah, they call it. But it is so cool to see these new characters come in. And for that show, although it had some of its faults with the writing and just how Marvel movies are made, seeing a Pakistani family just kind of live and see that slice of life is so interesting.
Yeah.
But of course the audience gets mad, but the saying is something like equality to those with the power feels like oppression.
It's strange that people get so up in arms just for like, I really don't get that whole, like, that forced diversity angle that so many people think that, like, is happening in media. It's just like, well, no, it's just that, you know, after generations and generations of, like, you know, immigrants who didn't really have the same opportunities, like, there are more diverse creators who are making things, and obviously they want to represent themselves, or people who may not be of that descent know that they have diverse fan bases who they want to cater to, and there's, like, nothing wrong with that. That's, like, that's a totally normal thing to do.
And a normal person should be able to see a show, even if it's someone of a different culture, isn't the same gender as you. As a human being, you should be able to connect with them. We're not that different. When I go somewhere and I see people hanging out and talking, and I don't understand the language, their body language, and the way they're interacting with each other, it's like, that's just how I hang out with my friends. That's how I interact with my family. Like, it's just, we're way more similar than we are different at the end of the day.
Yeah, no, that doesn't happen so much here. If you speak anything other than French, you'll get called out.
You talked a little thing about diversity versus authenticity. How do you think we can approach that better in terms of media, at least within Greek representation?
Obviously, like, in cases like Hades, I think the issue, so obviously, like, representation where it matters is really, really important, or representation that I feel like is deeper rather than broad is really, really important. And so that was one of the things I brought up in the Hades video too, because it's kind of like a thing that I'm used to, like I mentioned before, like, as a Greek person, just like seeing us go back to stories about Hercules and Zeus and all these, like, you know, superhero-esque gods who are kind of like incredibly whitewashed, even though Greece is closer to the Middle East than the rest of Europe. But it particularly stung with Hades because they were so open about their commitment to diversity. And so on top of like seeing not a single Greek looking person, which, by the way, also meant like not a single vaguely Middle Eastern looking person in the entire game, was really, really sad when they were so committed, like when they were so like open to, you know, being committed to diversity. And so I think the issue is, like, it's important to show audiences people who look like them. It matters a lot to them, but I think that representation can be a lot better, I don't know, I guess, like, implemented if it's deep, if it actually matters. Like, I think the example I gave in the, which is like a silly, well, I mean, not so silly, but the example I kind of like hung up on in the video a lot was Dionysius, who I have a personal connection to, having literally been named after him, who in the game was represented as South Asian, but whose South Asian representation didn't really go much deeper than literally his skin color. For example, his actor, the performer who performed the voice of the character, was a white guy putting on a British accent. So it's like, it kind of goes nowhere deeper than his color scheme, which, as most artists know, like, technically, like, it tends to be that, like, there are various iterations and color swaps of a character before they land on one. And then there was also the fact that of all the gods they decided to be South Asian, it was maybe the one god who probably shouldn't have been, given that, like, in his mythos, he has, like, kind of a dark history South Asia. And so it was kind of like, so I think the like, that line between authenticity and representation, I think, doesn't matter as much when, if you're sacrificing authenticity, which I think is completely fine, but if you're sacrificing it for representation, it should be representation that actually matters, that has impact. If you want to change the ethnicity of somebody for your game, for example, Dionysius, that's great, but unless you're actually hiring a South Asian person to perform, and like, someone actually of that descent gets paid for it, I don't know if you deserve the brownie points that you get from audiences who just kind of look at that and go, wow, that's great. You know, it's like, I think
it's,
you have
very
to, like,
surface level.
It's very surface level, and it's very surface level for how much praise it received, I think. And so I think that's what matters. Yeah, I think, like, the headline here is basically like, authenticity doesn't matter as much as representation does, but representation should have actual, real, tangible impact, and shouldn't just be, you know, a color swap.
Delve into these characters, do something unique about it. Like, how I'm a member of the queer community, so, like, feeling like queer representation in films is great, but when it's just kind of this, well, of course you want to get to a point where it's just kind of like, yeah, it's cool. Like, there's just queer people in films. But when they're like, they make a big point out of it in the movie, but they don't go into, you know, what that means, you know, the struggles the person might have faced, it just feels hollow.
Diverse representation, like, should, if you're passing it off as like you're actually putting a big effort, it should be the point. It shouldn't just be like a given or like a granted. Like, if you're really dedicated to exploring it, it should be worth a little bit more attention than, yeah, just like surface level kind of skimming it and being like, hey, look, someone who looks different than the rest of the characters you're used to, give us money, you know? Like, mm-hmm. it shouldn't be like that.
Well, Thor Love and Thunder, they kept promoting it as like, this is the biggest, gayest Marvel movie. And then it's just like, you know, they just joke about like, oh, Korg just has a guy named The Rock that he's dating at the end, and just Valkyrie likes women. It's like, do more. You can't do this.
Yeah, you can't pass it off as like such a big victory if you didn't actually deliver that much.
Well, Dennis, absolute pleasure talking with you. I can't wait to see more of your content. Where can people go to watch some of your videos?
Yeah, so they can go to, well, I mean, you found the TikTok, but really, really most of the full feature length stuff is on YouTube at my YouTube channel called Lamb Hoot.
Hey, you want to find out some more? Make sure you check out Dennis's content with Lamb Hoot on YouTube. I'm Ryan Funk. This was U Talk. And have yourself a good one.
Violent. Violent I am.